third down and 20.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Third and 20 Dynasty Podcast. I'm JT, joined by Lunas and Frank. No Jake today, but we are just going to roll along. We're in the middle of the summer, which means not a lot going on in the news and notes world, so we might skip it. It's kind of just been the same that we talked about last week with DeAndre Hopkins. He's been released. He's visiting with teams. Dalvin Cook, probably not going to stay with the Vikings, but there's not really been much movement. And how it typically goes with the third and 20 live streams is it's just going to happen tomorrow, whatever we're waiting for. Yeah. After we record. So with that, I think what we're going to do is a lot of game theory, a lot of looking at the market and what's currently valued. And I'm going to kick it off right there, guys, with there's an interesting post in Reddit. Let me pull it up so I could give the person credit who asked the question. It was you, Rhino underscore Thunder, asked it in the Dynasty Fantasy Football Reddit, which I rarely check nowadays because I feel like a lot of it is just not great information. But
one of the top posts was like, who's been disappointing in OTAs?
Yeah,
no one.
That's as far as news and notes go. Yeah,
catch anything.
As far as news and notes goes, OTAs have been happening. Do not pay attention to that at all. The only thing I would worry myself about is like an injury. Like if someone's tearing their ACL or something, of course that's going to affect them. But I don't care who's catching a ball in shorts. I don't care. But okay, so you, Rhino Thunder, asked, what are the biggest things you think aren't priced into the market? And so he put up some examples that Dak Prescott will be better this year. Lamar Jackson will be better this year because they have better weapons. They're going to regress to what they've been doing in the past, which I think is fair. And also that this guy, Jameson Williams, could be on a bigger hot seat than people are giving him credit for. So I'll flip it to you guys if you want to go first in what you think isn't accurately reflected in the market. I do have some thoughts of my own, though, if you guys want me to go.
I'll kick it off just as like a quick one because I think I mentioned it on one of the very previous episodes, but that Ravens offense, I completely agree that to me that's an offense that will let Lamar just kind of be a playmaker and play out of structure more. I think they're going to try that. Let him go back to the magic that we kind of saw his rookie year where it felt like he just had those improvisation plays. I think for the most part, people have chalked it up to scheme defenses kind of figuring out how to play Lamar, but I don't really buy that just because of how insane Lamar is off platform and obviously how quick he is. To me, that's a skill set that you kind of really can't scheme out without having like a major advantage up front or in coverage. So with all those weapons that they added, right, getting Bateman back, so that's kind of adding a weapon, plus another year of experience, and adding, obviously, Flowers and Odell. Dude, they have the weapons to completely win on the outside, which they've been lacking for a good chunk of time. I mean, last year, there was a stretch of time like Devin Duvernay is basically the best receiver that they had out there. That's ridiculous. So I think he is going to cook.
They had DeSean Jackson getting legit playing time.
There's going to be a trivia question like 10 years from now, like what teams did DeSean Jackson play for? And I'm not going to remember the Ravens.
Yeah. I do agree with that. Kind of to the second bullet point on that, I think he's not the only one. I see him, and I agree with Dak, and I still think it's the case with Kyler being really undervalued between those two, especially like Dak has fallen to QB 14. I think he's going to be 30 by the start of the season. I think instead he was like 29.8 years old on QB trade cut. He's been like able to stay healthy recently besides obviously the major injury he had a couple years ago in like a high passing attack offense. I feel like he's one of the more reliable QBs that you'll be able to count on for the next like 5 years fantasy-wise. And then with the other two kind of with injuries and obviously Kyler, it's like all the stuff about like how committed is he to like studying a playbook and everything. I still like when he was healthy, he was productive in fantasy and he's still young, I think 25 or 24 or something. And you see someone like, obviously someone like Anthony Richardson, the ceiling is what you're thinking about, but value wise, at least on like Keep Trey Kerr right now, it's Kyler in a second to get Anthony Richardson. And like one guy you've seen do it and is still like super young. So I think kind of those QBs are being undervalued. I think right now is a good buy period for those three. Because I agree with you, Frank. I think Lamar is going to kind of go back to being just like a fantasy monster. Kyler might take some time because he is the torn ACL, but I'm still very high on him. And I think Dak is just kind of being underrated. I think the interceptions will kind of calm back down. And he's going to be in a high-scoring offense. So
I think Dak is pretty fairly valued to me.
At QB 14?
If you're a content... Okay. He might be QB 14. He's still going in the second round of startups, and that's the mm-hmm. price that I have in mind, right? Okay. I think that's a fine pick, especially if you are a team that, let's say, drafted Justin Jefferson or Jamar Chase or even Bijan mm-hmm. in the first round of your draft. Getting Dak to be a QB 1 on a nice, you can contend with that build, right? You can go in and hopefully pick up like a Tua, and you can go that build. If you want, and then just kind of scoop up. But the problem that I have with Dak, and when I compare him to some of the really great quarterbacks down this stretch of their careers, this is like Dak's ideal prime, right? I just felt like those guys were kind of better than Dak is. Not that I think Dak is bad. I'm just not sure Dak has that elite. I don't think he spins the ball like some of the other elite quarterbacks do. And then from like a game perspective, I don't really think he's someone that reads the game at an insane level or something of that nature. Maybe he can grow into that. But that's the one thing that scares me from being like, oh, yeah, I'm going to increase Dak's value to the likes of even a Kyler Murray. Right? I value Kyler significantly ahead of Dak. And I think that there is a decent bit of a gap between him and the true top super flex options at the quarterback position.
I think that's fair. JT, what was the point you said you wanted to make earlier with it? If it's related to the QBs.
It's not related to those QBs, but I think you guys did a good job summing up. And I mean, I kind of want to build off it more so than... what we were talking about. Like, I wanted to build off the Dynasty Reddit post into other players. So it's not going to be an off season without me standing on my hill, planting my flag for Baker Mayfield.
Oh.
Because hear me out. Okay. Baker Mayfield is currently quarterback 34 in startups. He is a starting quarterback. I mean, unless you think Kyle Trask is going to beat him out, which I just don't see happening. I haven't heard anything of otherwise to believe that Kyle Trask is going to beat out Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield is the cheapest starting quarterback you could get right now. He's currently ranked behind Hendon Hooker, who is not going to be starting for the Lions. He's injured. He's also only like a couple years younger than Baker Mayfield. Hendon Hooker is old. Baker Mayfield's only 28. So it's not like you're getting like, age production-wise, I get Hendon Hooker we haven't seen in the NFL yet, but Baker Mayfield, when we have seen him, has actually been decent, other than what I've said previously, the year where he tore his labrum, which was really bad. Can't really defend him, though, for his gameplay there. But when we saw Baker Mayfield in his brief stint with the Rams, he actually looked pretty decent. He had Cooper Kupp as his receiver. Now he's going to have Chris Godwin and Mike Evans as his two receivers. One of them, in Mike Evans, is like guaranteed Hall of Famer. So, I don't know, unless I'm told otherwise, and I'm told Baker Mayfield will not be starting for this Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense, I think it's wheels up for Baker at his current price. He's in the 18th round, 14th round of startups.
Yeah, in startups, I think that if you're a team looking for a QB3 or even going the option, because I have seen this work out, and if you did it last year, you're probably jumping for joy right now. Scooping up those types of players in the back end there of those startups where you just stack like Baker Mayfield, Jacoby Brissett, and then you try to add another guy or two like that. And on top of having your elite option that you draft early, there's kind of your QB build. There's kind of two things I have to say because I do like Baker right now at that price, but the problem I think you run into is don't you just kind of have to pay a late second to get him? And at that value, you're paying more like 12th round startup price. Or just now you're into the second round where the startup price he's going at is a third round pick, like an early third round.
Here are some trades that happened, that actually happened with Baker Mayfield that I would do. I have it pulled up right here. Baker Mayfield and Josh Palmer for a 2024 second. Fine. Sam Howell. Yeah, I would trade away. Okay, I was trying to read that correctly. I would trade away Sam Howell for Baker Mayfield and a 2024 second. I would trade away Alec Pierce and 2025 third for Baker Mayfield. Giving up a second to get both Alan Lazard and Baker Mayfield? Sure.
To me, it's better than picking up Palmer, at least.
Yeah. 2024 third for Baker Mayfield. 2024 third for Baker Mayfield. Jared Goff and a third for Baker Mayfield and a first. I would do that.
I would do that.
Baker Mayfield for 209. That's fine. I think I have 209 right now, but I also have Baker Mayfield in our home league, so I can't do that. I'm looking around right now. This guy got Baker Mayfield and Kyle Trask for a third. Baker Mayfield and 208. Baker Mayfield for 208 and 507. Baker Mayfield for OBJ. That's an interesting one. I think I'd rather Baker Mayfield. Actually, I'd definitely rather have Baker Mayfield now that I think about it. So it seems like at times he's a late second, but depending on the league and whatnot, you might be able to get him even cheaper.
Here's the major question for me. Do you actually think Baker Mayfield has long-term potential, or is it just a one-year buy?
That's my hesitation, because I view it more as a one-year buy, where I think it makes sense making that move if, say, there's an early like week injury to one of your QBs and you need like a QB too badly that can just fill in and get you, like, obviously he's not going to be like high scoring, but just fill that spot until your main QB2 comes back. Or I don't know, if you're like if you're a team that's like trying to make the playoffs and you have Kyler who might miss like the first half of the season, whatever it may be, or if you have like Purdy, I think it makes sense in those cases. Where I'm like hesitant with the late second, because I do agree with, I think startup value in the 14th round, that's really good value for him. It's just more so with the second round pick part. And I know it's like a low hit rate, especially in that range, like maybe, so let's say like a 210, 211. I'm skeptical about Baker starting like past this season.
Yeah, that's fine. I think if you look at it as I'm getting Baker Mayfield for one season where I feel solid about him, but then he also has the upside of just being a starter quarterback in the future as well, which I think you can't discount. Like he definitely could be starting next year too. I think that's an easy move that I would make. I'm looking at it now. So in his rookie year, he was averaging 20.9 points per game. Then it was 17 points per game the year after, 18.8 the year after that. And then obviously he had the bad season where he had 15.3 points per game. And then last year, which was just nothing, he had like 11 points per game. So if you're telling me I could pick up a quarterback who, when healthy, is putting up over 17 points per game for the price of a late second, maybe even early third, or just some random wide receiver that has upside on your team or like perceived upside on your team, I'm trading them for Baker Mayfield.
The credence I'll give to your argument is that you're right. Like, some of those trades were just fantastic. I guess the trade that...
People hate Baker Mayfield. It's very easy to not like Baker Mayfield based on his... It's kind of like the crazy diagonal or whatever. It's like he's not good enough for how confident he is. So people just bash him even more than he should be. Like, the perceived outlook on Baker Mayfield is worse than what Baker Mayfield actually is.
Right, and I think that the Bucks are going to be a team that it has a very good likelihood of being at the league average, if not higher, in pass attempts per game. So that helps, right? That does help. When you're on a run-first offense that's not good, you're not scoring a whole lot as a quarterback, unless you're insanely efficient or you get rushing yards.
All right, that was the offseason big.
Well, yeah, we can go into a couple other, like, are they actually priced in or not? I mean, do you guys have any other situations off the top of your head?
Let me Let me scan right now and see. I'm sure I do. Do you have any right now as I'm looking?
I'm looking through also. Are you guys fully out on Russell Wilson?
No.
He's at QB24 now.
Not fully. I don't know. Last season was just so trash that it really dampened it.
Because I'm trying to think, like, it's like, what do you do if you have him?
I think there's few scenarios I'm actually buying Russ. Like, I'm just always selling. I'm not buying. Like, okay, if I have him in a couple leagues, I'm holding in a handful.
But so that's what I'm saying. Like, you'd hold right now.
If I'm going to buy a quarterback, I would want to buy someone with more upside or that I just know is going to score points. There's no question about it. I'll gladly pay more.
Which is fair. Yeah, I was just looking because his value is like plummeted. I'm trying to see what's the draft pick he's around. Like, he's below both Niners young QBs, which makes sense. He's around like Pacheco and Cam Akers.
That range of quarterbacks in the startup draft, unless they're like the young, really questionable ones, I'm not ever picking Jared Goff at 6'10", the end of the sixth round, right around ahead of Zay Flowers, Terry McLaurin, Chris Godwin, Ayuk, Kincaid, Ridley. Taking all those guys over Goff easy. Russell Wilson is behind all those dudes, but nonetheless, like mid-7th, not taking him there. Geno Smith right beside him. I don't really want Geno at that price. Kirk Cousins at 6'04". Why? Okay, they're fine, but I don't know. It's just a little high. I'd rather just wait and pick up. If I want a contending quarterback, give me Carr or Rodgers. Two rounds, a round and a half later. But in these drafts, I'm coming out in the beginning of the draft swinging. Fact of the matter is, at least this year, there's good quarterbacks in the round two. Kyler Murray, Dak Prescott, Bryce Young, Deshaun Watson, Anthony Richardson, CJ Stroud, and Tua can all be obtained in the second round and beyond.
Yeah, I agree. It was interesting. I feel this time last year, by the end of the first round, like, you didn't really feel good about any of the ones after.
They just had some major question marks.
Yeah.
There wasn't a Kyler Murray to scoop up in the second round.
Yeah, no, I kind of wish I could see startup drafts from a year ago to that. But no, I'm with you on that. Trying to see if there's anyone else that sticks out.
Other offenses where shit isn't fully priced in. We kind of just talked about the Cardinals last week, but they're a team where I'm not sure that Kyler Murray misses as much time as people think. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot of just undervaluedness about the Cardinals. You know, Cliff Kingsbury regime just left such a bad taste in your mouth. That what if they're actually good? On top of the fact that Kyler's been fantastic whenever he plays, Hollywood has, for the most part, been really good whenever he plays. And when he was playing for them last year, he was pretty insane.
Yeah, I've been trying to buy Hollywood in a couple of weeks. He's at wide receiver 34 now. He's below, like, Ridley. He's below, like, a Damian Pierce, Kincaid.
I think the real question is, if you want to buy Hollywood and you're really serious about it, are you willing to pay a future first and a future third as a contender for him? Because if you're willing to pay that, you can have him in a majority of leagues, I'd imagine.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, yeah, I guess it depends on which year, but I don't know. Let's just say even like this draft. Like if I'm a contender and I have 111 this year, I like the idea of trading that for Hollywood. Once we get like multi-years out, if you're a contender,
you probably... Well, 111 this year, I agree, but if I have Hollywood, I'm not trading for 111 straight up in any league.
Yeah. What draft pick do you think it would take this year? Like
110 is the only pick where I start considering it, because I like the top 10 this year. So that basically means in most drafts, I like Kincaid and Zay Flowers. So
yeah, I'd rather Hollywood than Zay Flowers and Kincaid.
So I was going to say, I think I'd go up to 109.
I'd rather Quinn Johnson than Hollywood.
I probably agree with you, JT, but I don't have Hollywood valued like significantly higher than those players, right? Mm-hmm. Like the realistic difference is a third at most.
I think in terms of other undervalued teams, if you want, or do you want to stick with the Cardinals? Because I think like James Conner, for example, we talked about him last week as well. Running back 35, I think he's the locked in starter there.
I have no idea how gonna, Denver offense.
I just ride him until the wheels fall off. The Denver offense?
Yeah, well, like guys like Javonte Williams, Judy. Like Javonte after his rookie year was like, there were discussions like, where is he in the top five dynasty running backs?
I think he's like RB2 at a point, RB3.
Yeah, and then now he's like RB15.
I'm looking, so Jerry Jeudy and Javonte are both going in the fifth round of startups.
I think Javonte in the fifth round is pretty interesting value.
If Russell Wilson's in the seventh.
A team that's sticking out to me like a sore thumb right now is the Chicago Bears running back room.
Khalil Herbert, I was just looking at Khalil Herbert. He's super cheap.
Dude, I think Donta Foreman's the only one to actually buy here. What if they all just cannibalize each other and it's really not that great of a scenario for anyone?
I think the reason you've seen Herbert's value drop is because, correct me if I'm wrong, it was the prior coach and GM that brought Herbert in, and then their current ones, at least current coach, is the one who went out and signed Foreman this offseason. So,
I mean, sure, but the current coach used him last year where he had a very good season when he was playing.
No, I'm a Herbert fan. I'm just explaining why people might be lower on him. I think it's going to be pretty close to a 50-50 backfield where they are going to kind of cannibalize each other. Which one's cheaper right now? I think between the two, I might just prefer the cheaper one. Foreman, right?
And that's where it goes Roshan, then Herbert, then Foreman.
Yeah, like I feel like if I had to pick between Herbert and Foreman, I'm just going to take the cheaper one, which in this case would be Foreman. Unless you see it more, is it like Foreman only gets like a 25% share? And
so I'll tell you why I find it interesting is that to me, Roshan Johnson, from what you saw from Texas last year, is the type of dude that I just want to put him one-on-one in the middle of the line, right? So like, let me get him in the B gap one-on-one and just let him use his power. So to me, that really favors like a gap scheme, a lot of power counter. But then Khalil Herbert's the exact opposite of that. Khalil Herbert, I want going sideways, reading the flow of the defense in his own heavy scheme. And then Donta Foreman, I think, can honestly do either. So I like part of it, if you really want to get into the nitty gritty, is figuring out, okay, what are the Bears going to favor? How are they going to approach the running attack? Which is also a factor of, like, is Justin Fields going to be still heavy in these Justin Fields-designed runs? Which is always, like, a touchy subject for offensive coordinators here and there, because I think you do legitimately have OCs who are like, no, we're not going to use our QB in the designed run game due to fears of injury. So like, how does that play a factor? It's honestly, to me, impossible to predict, and I'm not going to go watch every Bears game back to figure out what the fuck I think they're going to do with their run scheme.
I just think, I mean, we haven't seen Roshan Johnson yet.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say, but I think if this is a team that's cannibalizing each other in the running back room, I think Khalil Herbert's the one that would get the higher valued opportunities to me. Just because, like we saw with David Montgomery, Khalil Herbert was able to carve out a nice role for himself with a player who was drafted fairly high. or what was Montgomery, a third rounder, second rounder? Yeah. But I think right now it's Khalil Herbert's job to lose. He's the one that's most familiar with the system. He's the one who was able to do it last
year. I also just think he's the best bat, but
I agree with that too.
So if JT's right and they just emulate what they did last year with Montgomery and one of these running backs is the odd man out, and that could happen due to injury, right? You're just almost
running back position.
Because these guys aren't that expensive. If you invest 2 seconds and a third, you can probably own the Bears running back room. And that might even be overpaying for
it. That might be, yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, that'd be...
So if there's almost two factors at play. You're actually talking me into the Bears now that you mentioned that. Because if they go by the history and run the ball at a significantly higher rate than everyone else, then they can sustain two running backs again. If their offense is good, they have an even better chance of sustaining multiple running backs. If one of them ever gets hurt, then there's a clear path to having two good running backs. And with that stack, anytime the Bears score a rushing touchdown, like, you have a pretty good shot at it being on your fantasy team. So it could almost be like that season where you had Zeke and Pollard both relevant. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're necessarily as good, but it's the budget version, right? You're getting it for a third of the price.
I mean, it's kind of, if you just want to, it's kind of lazy, but Foreman last year and Chuba Hubbard, once CMC was gone, like, they're both usable at times. Then one would get hurt or, you know, wouldn't get in, and then it'd be super upside for the other. But I can move us on to another team that I do think has kind of undervalued everywhere other than the quarterback position, which is funny because, as I'm going to say it, I think the receiving room is super undervalued, and that's the Saints, the New Orleans Saints. Because while Chris Olave is sitting there at wide receiver 8, which is pretty high to me, especially as the Chris Olave hater last year, I still think that's fine for where he's priced. I think he's young, like he can be great. I don't think he's going to be in that elite tier and join the Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase of the world, but I think he is going to be a very good wide receiver. He's at least shown it. But then we're talking about other players like Michael Thomas, who, when healthy, is just a cheat code, and we just haven't seen him healthy in the past couple of years. But he's all the way down at wide receiver 60. He's in the 13th round.
Didn't he just get shoulder surgery, though?
Yeah, Michael Thomas... apparently
supposed to be good for the start of training camp.
Yeah, but that's where I was going to go with right there, Frank. Thank you. Michael Thomas isn't currently healthy. He's super cheap at wide receiver 60. And then there's also the guy last year who didn't have a ton of targets, but when he did, was super good, in Rashid Shaheed. Who put up, I'm pulling up his stats now, he had 8.3 fantasy points per game, 12 games played, on a team where it was Andy Dalton and Jameis Winston throwing him the ball, and he was, you know, a rookie who wasn't going to get opportunity ahead of Chris Olave. Cool. So he's already carved himself a nice role. I think Michael Thomas was already referring to them as the big three. They do have Derek Carr there, who, I'm not as high on Derek Carr, but he's a competent quarterback. Like, he can pass the ball.
Better than their that's PBC something.
Yeah, that's it's an improvement. It's an improvement on what we've been seeing. So I think it's very good. Also, Alvin Kamara.
I was going to say, for me, it's their backfield that's the hardest to gauge their value.
Well, yeah, you just don't know how long Kamara is going to get suspended. I would probably guess 4 games.
Yeah, I was going to say my guess was like 6, but then you have. They signed Jamal Williams, who's coming off a really good fantasy season.
Yeah.
And I guess, like, how much did his value drop?
But we've seen, we've seen it, though, where with Kamara specifically, Kamara and Mark Ingram.
But then I'm saying then they also drafted a running back
in the
ground. So then how does that rookie come into play? It's not just
a team. I like Kendre Miller, but
I do. It feels like a Tony Pollard.
Kendre Miller is the most expensive running back in this running back room right now. And same thing with Roschon Johnson. I think that they're decent players. I like them, but man, they are pricey right now to invest in.
I think it's because Kendrick Miller, everyone's thinking like, oh, it's like the next, like the Kamara replacement. He's still really fucking good, even though he's going to miss a few games. And then Jamal Williams, now he just came off a season where he was insanely productive. And so it's like,
Jamal Williams is the one I'm out on.
Yeah, but
I just don't think you don't repeat that kind of touchdown production.
No, you don't repeat that kind of touchdown production, but he could easily put up like another 730-yard season and
like 7-8 touchdowns.
At the end of the day, that not necessarily for fantasy, but for this running back room is a significant chunk. So it's like, this is just something funny I want to mention because I feel like, you know, this is classic. And I didn't necessarily disagree with the price tag, but in a startup draft, I'm just not sure I want the risk of these players. Maybe it works out, actually. I'm looking at the board. But everyone's always on and on about, like, oh, what was the 49ers dude? Trey Sermon. They're like, oh, learn from Trey Sermon. Oh, learn from the Bucks guy. What's his name?
Rashad White?
Not Rashad White.
Oh, no, Keyshawn Vaughn. Yeah.
But it's like, it doesn't matter because any running back that goes to a halfway decent spot that was decently productive that goes in like the third round is going to be valued at this very early second type of price tag.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's times where it's worked out. And when it works out after the rookie year, they're usually really productive during the rookie year, and their price can get pretty fucking high. But that like these are risky investments right now, especially because I can make an argument for the Bears running back room and the Saints running back room, where the running backs on their team right now are significantly better than them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, you can argue about the future, but it's like.
It's stuff that, yeah, that's what I'm saying. And they just signed Jamal Williams this offseason. It's not like he was, like, already on the roster. And I think to, like, a not super cheap contract either. I mean, it's, like, cheap relatively just because running backs get paid less. But
Contract Lunis has made his appearance.
Huh?
Contract Lunis has made his appearance on the show.
I mean, that's I just view it on, like, how much a team
Would you rather take Mayer than these running backs in the beginning of the second round?
Then
who's the running back?
Kendre Miller.
Kendre Miller, A-Chain.
Yeah, no, I'd rather Mayer.
And I mean, Charbonnet's in there, but Charbonnet is, from a draft pick perspective, a different tier than Miller and A-Chain.
I think what's kind of scary about A-Chain is at any given moment, say Mixon or Dalvin Cook, like I feel like he's getting a lot of hype because of the opportunity that's there, but any second this summer training camp, Dalvin Cook or Mixon ends up going to Miami, like this value is going to drop a decent amount, whether or not, like regardless of how you view him as a prospect. Kendrick, I really like Miller. So that's the one that's tough for me because I was really high on him pre-draft.
I do too. I really like Miller as well, but you have to realize that it's like a significant risk. Like you quite literally are drafting a Trey Sermon type of prospect.
Yeah,
like,
I'm out on Kendrick Miller.
I think Kendrick Miller is better than Trey Sermon, but from a prospect perspective, it's not like Kendrick Miller is leaps and bounds ahead of Sermon
pre-draft. Yeah.
So. It's just a risky fucking pick. But if it pans out, it's huge because it's a productive player out of the early second round of your rookie draft.
I think I'm out on Kendrick Miller, especially at...
I still like him a lot. I think it's going to... I wouldn't expect much his rookie season. He's actually maybe someone that I might try to like test the market on what it is after his rookie year. Because I could see him having a disappointing season compared to where he is getting drafted relatively, like in the second round of these rookie drafts. Because I still like him long-term outlook-wise. But we'll see. If there's nothing else on those backfields, I was going to bring up another team where I find kind of their, more so the receiver group, tough to value. I was going to say the Carolina Panthers. Their running back run...
Terrace Marshall.
I feel pretty good about. I still think Chuba holds some value because it's not like Miles is going to be like a 25 carry game guy. But I feel really, I think Miles Sanders will get a lot of run, and I think Hubbard will be like a decent guy. You can maybe fill in on some bye weeks in your flex. But the receiving room, like, there are so many different combinations of you, what you could tell me the wide receiver 1, 2, and 3 will be in terms of production at the end of the season that, like, I wouldn't be surprised by that game.
You want to know what this is? This is, to me, one of the easiest receiver rooms to gauge.
Okay.
Everyone's trash, but you can take the gamble that Mingo is not, but he's probably not going to be great.
I'm not taking I'm not taking the gamble on Mingo as high as he is.
And I think that that's completely fair because I agree with you. At his ADP, Mingo doesn't make sense. I have seen drafts because I got a share of Mingo this way where he drops down into more of like the late 11th round type rookie value. Mid 11th round, like somewhere around there, right? Because like,
which is probably like what draft pick?
Just like
draft.
A late second. It's like a very late like a late second, right? Like somewhere like 209, 208, 210, okay. Somewhere around there. I think that that's a fine investment, but dude, this receiver room fucking blows.
Yeah,
that's what it is. That's why you can't predict what the hell is going to happen. It's because they all suck. Like, okay, I like DJ Chark. But this is the common fallacy where it's like he's so cheap, but who the fuck is giving him up for a fourth? Like, you have to pay a third. Yeah. And, like, I'm not even giving him up for a late third. It's like, dude, why am I going to give him up for, like, 3-11 unless Jalin Hyatt's on the board? No, I'm just going to keep him. So now I have to pay, like, a mid-late sort of third? Okay, like, fine, but... What's the difference then between him and Gallup?
I was gonna like, say, is he oh really God, gonna have? Much rather have Gallup. Yeah.
So yeah, I think that that's where like Thielen. No, dude, I'm out on Thielen. Give him to me for a third.
Yeah. In or terms of
give third, me,
yeah.
Sell him for a third.
I'm a little bit higher on Mingo. I'd feel comfortable taking him mid second. Because, I don't know, maybe I'm overvaluing the draft capital yet. Because he was one of, like, what, the first three picks of the second round?
He was a pretty high draft. No, I think he was, like, pick 38.
Yeah. I can look quick. But, yeah, like, that does matter to me.
But, I think we honestly all agree where Mingo is realistically the only receiving option
disagree.
That makes sense to invest in.
Disagree. So here's my evaluation of the Panthers, yeah, right?
I'm going to hear...
Bryce Young is overvalued for what he is, but I think he's good. I like Bryce Young. It's just he's highly valued. But it's fine. Whatever. Miles Sanders, I actually kind of do agree with Lunas. I think Miles Sanders is underpriced for where he is. Like, he's got a good contract.
I think he's going to get a lot of them.
I don't care about Chuba Hubbard. I don't think Chuba Hubbard's good, so I'll just tack that on. I think it's Miles Sanders' backfield. So Miles Sanders... He's not very exciting, but he's going to give you those nice flex points. It's whatever. I think he's the one I'd acquire. From this entire team, looking at this entire team, he's probably the one that I'd most earnestly trade for. I'm not really trying to trade for any of them that hard, but Miles Sanders probably would be that guy. Then we look at their receiving room. We just talked about Jonathan Mingo. I think that's too high. Even if he's a late second rounder, I still feel like that might be too high for Jonathan Mingo. He's not that... have anything good in college until his final year, and even then I'm not that impressed. DJ Chark, he had that one good year of probably like 3 years ago at this point. Yeah. Haven't seen it since. I'm not relying on DJ Chark. I'm feeling it's intriguing, especially that he just keeps falling in price, but I mean, age and everything compared to like how he is as a player compared to the other aging wide receivers, I don't think Adam Thielen's the one that's going to break the mold and be the guy who's actually producing in his mid-30s. Just talked about Chuba Hubbard, Hayden Hurst, don't like. Terrace Marshall, I obviously was super high on. I'm not buying Terrace Marshall at whatever price he is right now.
He's probably really cheap. I thought you were about to say you were.
No, because I'm looking at, like, Terrace Marshall in a second for Keenan Allen. Terrace Marshall for a third is intriguing, depending on like where I think that third is. I don't know. Terrace Marshall, I'm not on my stump for Terrace Marshall like I used to be. If I could make lateral moves like Tyquan Thornton into Terrace Marshall, like these people mean in the trade I'm looking at, that I think is fine. I'm not really in on Tyquan Thornton. But if I have to give up like a second, like this person is for Terrace Marshall, that's where I'm like, no, thank you. I'll keep my second. But the one guy that I do look at and I'm like, maybe he could carve out a nice role. Like this team is kind of devoid of good players. Laviska Shenault, I think, has a chance to just, I'm not going to say the Debo role, but I think he has a chance to get himself schemed into this offense pretty nicely in one that really just lacks talent. There's just no talent on this team. And Laviska Shenault, I'm going to clutch on to what I saw from his first year, clutch on to how he's able to do yards after the catch and all that fun stuff. And maybe Laviska Shenault ends up being good, because I'm looking at like Foster Moreau and Laviska Shenault for a fifth. I'm looking at like, he's extremely cheap. I'm just going to take the cheapest guy on this team. I mean, it's looking like the most part he's going for like a late third, early fourth.
No, I he did have some good moments that year, but yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like it's five receivers between Thielen, Chark, Mingo, Marshall, and Shenault, where it's to the point I was saying earlier, if you told me just how they ranked as like fantasy receivers at the end of the year, no order of those five would surprise me. Like, I guess Mingo being fifth would be a little bit surprising. But there's zero combination that I would be like shocked at.
Listen, I'll take Shenault over Thielen. And the thing that's annoying about Shenault is that from a numbers perspective, given the fact that he has had success in the league before, I can understand investing in him at that price. But when I watched Shenault at Jacksonville that final season, he was so dog shit that I look and I'm like, dude, that guy is not going to be good no matter what. Right? Like, I could throw him the ball 15 times a game and he's still not going to produce looking like that.
I've given most of Jacksonville's players a pass for that year.
That's fair. Because... and you never know, like, maybe there's something going on in his personal life or whatever. And now with this change of scenery, like, I feel like this happens for some players in the league, right? You're off your rookie team. Like, maybe that lit a fire under him this offseason. A new regime comes in, and you're right. He's able to get back to what we had seen Shenault being. So, yeah, for the price of admission, fine. I'm going to predict, though, that more likely than not, he ends up as a roster clogger. I'm going to keep my late third over him, but instead of doing like a Tyquan Thornton for Terrace Marshall, you could definitely do something like even worse than Tyquan Thornton for a Shenault. You can move into him really, really cheaply.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do that with our orphan team.
Pick up a Shenault. Yeah, I mean, I was going to say someone from this team has to score you fantasy points, but...
that's what I'm saying.
No, that's a fallacy.
Does someone have to? Yeah. Nope. That's what I was like, does someone have to? I don't know. Maybe no one does. It's just...
who's the starting tight end again?
Hayden Hurst. Hayden Hurst is a sneaky buy. The problem is we all know that Hayden Hurst is not going to be... he's not going to be anything more than a waste lord, and he doesn't really offer you anything long-term. But the fact of the matter is that he could be a startable tight end that you could pick up for a third round pick. We've seen guys like Gerald Everett bounce around and then eventually be relevant. I think that a similar thing could happen with Hayden Hurst, where he bounces around and then finds a spot where he's somewhat relevant for a good stretch. And as your tight end two or tight end three, I think that there's value in that.
I think Everett, even though he wasn't really that productive until recently, I think he showed more in the opportunities he got.
There were times where guys like Gerald Everett and David Njoku like literally couldn't get on the field.
Yeah.
People don't talk about enough the 25th pick in 2018 NFL draft was Hayden Hurst. and then pick 32.
That was, he was so overdrafted though.
Pick 32. Pick 32 was Lamar Jackson. And then Mark Andrews was pick 86.
Yeah.
So, and Orlando Brown was pick 83 too.
Yeah, that's insane.
So they drafted Hayden Hurst over all those guys, which is crazy. All right, yeah, that enough Ravens. We keep going. All roads lead back to the Ravens. That was my fault for that one, though. Anything? Any other teams undervalued? Any other overvalued? Maybe
position groups.
I was kind of crazy to see how gross the Panthers are. I wonder what their what do you think their projected win total is.
I think realistically a team, but we mentioned them last episode with Elijah Moore, who I think is the main benefactor, but the Browns passing attack getting better in year two.
I wonder what Njoku's price is.
Texans, specifically Schultz. I will say that I am starting to really like CJ Stroud. Like, the price of admission, I think, is pretty high. So, like, it's not like I'm like, oh, C.J. Stroud is undervalued, but I don't know. I think that the Texans have a little bit more talent than people are giving them credit for. Like, they're not world beaters or anything, but
is there a receiver one entering next season?
I mean, they have a hodgepodge of somewhat interesting players, right? So, like, Nico Collins is kind of interesting. John Mechie coming back, if he's healthy, is interesting.
Mechie's interesting.
Tank Dell is interesting, right? He was productive at school. Now they add, like, Dalton Schultz, like, kind of interesting. Their offensive line is not as bad as it used to be, which is kind of interesting. I mean, they're not, like, world beaters or anything, I'd say. I mean, their running back room with now Dameon Pierce is kind of interesting. So their whole roster is just, like, kind of interesting. But they have this aroma around them of the Texans that have been. And
I'm
interested
to see who emerges
teams.
As kind of the wide receiver one from that group. I have no idea what to expect from Mechie coming off what he's coming off of. But if you're going to tell me he's going to be fully healthy, I would guess him. And I do also like Tank Dell. I don't dislike Nico Collins, just as kind of I feel like I've been waiting for, like, a bit now on, like, him to, like, break through. And maybe it'll happen with Stroud, but Mechie is the one I find the most interesting, and I also like Tank Dell a lot. Is Tank Dell still going in the third round of rookie drafts?
Yeah, I think he's still going in the late third. I'm not a huge Tank Dell guy, but I agree with you in the fact that I value Tank Dell in that mid-third.
Same.
Like, at least, like, 306, 305, and I'm consistently picking him up beyond that. And to me, in the rookie draft this year, the late third is very murky waters. Because, I mean, JT might disagree with me here, but, you know, guys like Sean Tucker, who literally didn't get drafted, and, you know, got, like, day three receivers are going ahead of him, who I'm just not gonna do that with how much he produced and where he went in the draft and the interesting situation. But
Over Sean Tucker.
Okay. The one thing I will say is that you look at the numbers, investing in these receiver rooms with the rookie quarterbacks is not really a recipe for success here. Right? No. Like, the only time I think it really makes sense is if you're investing in a young receiver where it's like, okay, now everything is brighter, so we expect them to produce more, so their price increases, right? So, like, that's why I think, going back to the Panthers, like a Mingo, I can at least understand that, because if he goes out there and puts up, like, 800 yards as Bryce Young's top option, then the next season everyone's going to be like, okay, the offense is going to be better. Jonathan Mingo is now priced in to get 1,000 yards, and you can sell him.
Yeah.
Or you keep him if you think he's really that good. But it coming out here and being like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go, and maybe that I've been fucking up, because you look at Michael Pittman Jr.'s price right now, like, as a contender, having Michael Pittman Jr. compared to the receivers being drafted around him might kind of be a kick in the shin.
What do you mean by that?
It's just like these rookie receivers. I mean, you could go for some of even the best players at the quarterback position. Their rookie years were not productive. Like they're not. I mean, yeah, the trend has bucked a little bit recently, but man, it's a little ugly.
I mean, talking about a player we were talking about earlier, Baker Mayfield had like one of the best rookie seasons of all time. And he was only putting up, I'm pulling up his stats right now. Nope, I don't want attempts per game. I want fantasy points per game. Here we go.
And it's more so not.
He's putting up 20 points per game.
It's more so, it's not even just the rookie QB themselves, but like them being able to like consistently support a receiver or multiple receivers.
Yeah.
I think that's where it gets tricky.
I think Justin Herbert was able to kind of buck that trend.
Yeah, but he's kind of almost like an exception to the rule.
Yeah, but that's what I was going with, because if you look back at other quarterbacks from recent years, Trevor Lawrence had severe struggles. I mean, basically that entire quarterback class had severe struggles.
So Jarvis Landry with Baker Mayfield on 150 targets put up 976 yards and 4 touchdowns for the Baker Mayfield rookie season offense. So, like, to me, you can make a realistic argument that Michael Pittman's ceiling is like this kind of a season, which I guess is fine. It's not really terrible. But then you're coming out here and expecting Anthony Richardson to have Baker Mayfield rookie numbers as well.
Well, are we even sure Anthony Richardson's the day one starting quarterback?
I'm going to just assume he is.
That's by week 4. Minshew isn't like one of like.
I mean, Baker, his rookie year was also not the day one starting quarter. It took him 4 games. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if we can price in the 4 games, like, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think Anthony Richardson's going to be. Because we heard it all during the draft and everything. Like, this guy's not ready yet. He's going to need time to develop. I mean, maybe you throw him into the fire, but I don't think that's going to be what happens here.
I think you're going to see him kind of – he's a different kind of runner, but similar to, like, Fields rely on his legs a lot, where having a receiver on that team that you have to bank on, it's going to be – like, there are going to be a lot of weeks that are, like, brutal.
Yeah. Agreed.
Especially while at least he's, like, a rookie. Second, third year, we'll see, but – Lies a rookie. I think he's going to be running a ton. I think they're just going to be giving Jonathan Taylor like 25 carries a game.
This Colts team, I think, other than Jonathan Taylor, I think I'm avoiding.
It's different with tight ends, though. Stroud could be a bottom 10 quarterback, and Schultz could still be an elite tight end option. I don't think Schultz is good enough to be an elite tight end option.
I was going to say, like the tier.
Like, being a wastelord, like, or maybe even an upgraded wastelord, like, he could be around there. What is Schultz's price? Where is he going in this?
He's a little bit, I think he's like tight end 16 or something, which I think is a little bit low for him.
He's like a mid-second. He's right around Evan Ingram, Gabe Davis, Sam Howell, Elijah Moore.
I think it's hard to say, like, Dalton Schultz has gotten an upgrade in his... When, like, he's going to be with that rookie quarterback, sure, you could say it doesn't affect him, but he's going from one of the highest passing attacks in the league to the Texans. Like, I don't know what the Texans are going to do, but it's not the Cowboys. I can guarantee that. And even when he was on the Cowboys, like...
Oh, the Cowboys was a better spot for him to...
He put up 11.5 points per game last year. It's not, like, super exciting stats from Dalton Schultz. I don't think I would expect much more than that. I guess theoretically you could argue like he could have a top 12 season and he's ranked outside the top 12, but I'd rather just trade for other players that aren't Dalton Schultz or whoever is around there. And Starup says he's tight end 13.
Top 7 finished nearly guaranteed going outside the top 12 consistently.
Yeah, is it guaranteed?
The problem I have with Dalton Schultz, though, is more so, I guess, like his long-term value. I just don't really hate Dalton Schultz, but he's also not really a player. Like, what's the realistic argument that Dalton Schultz is better than David Njoku or...
He's not.
Or Evan Ingram.
I'd rather Njoku.
And then I almost might want to just take the swing with the upside on a Greg Dulcich over Dalton Schultz as well, even though I know that Greg Dulcich is probably not going to score as many points. But if Greg Dulcich goes out there and puts up only 100 yards less than Dalton Schultz, he's going to be significantly higher valued next season. And if I'm relying on either of these guys to be my tight end one on my contending build, it just hurts a little bit. But yeah, if Dalton Schultz is your contender tight end and you have him paired with, let's say you drafted Mayer or Laporta, or you have like a Dulcich on your bench and you have them stacked, like, I think that's fine. Like, at that point, that I'm comfortable having Dalton Schultz. But Dalton Schultz, I'm not confident enough to have him as like the only decent tight end on my roster.
Agreed.
But listen, I guess the one thing that Dalton Schultz has going for him is that his price has gone down from where not really significantly, but he's a trending down asset. So you're probably more likely to get him at a cheaper price than the startup ADP than other players.
Yeah, he's fallen about a round in ADP recently.
So, like, realistically, the pick that is, where's the next rookie going after him? I mean, like, a late second, right? Like, you could probably, in some leagues, pick up Dalton Schultz for a late second, right? Like, a 209, 210 for someone that wants that, a Tank Bigsby or a Roshan or something really badly. Maybe even, like, a Hendon Hooker.
Tight ends are weird in that.
That's other than, more, that's so expensive.
Yeah, other than David Njoku outside the top five, I don't know if I'm excited about playing any of them in a week-to-week basis. Like, a David Njoku, outside I think, does five. Have a chance to pop. Yeah, outside of the top five tight ends.
Is Goddard still outside the top five? He's someone I still yep. like just because of the high-scoring offense that he's on.
Goddard is closer to Kittle than any of these other tight ends, right? Yeah. So like he's priced almost as if he's a fringe top five, or like the fifth tight end. And
no, I get what you're saying.
Part of it though is that when you're a tight end, I here's like the pro and the con to me with the tight ends. A tight end only has to have like 80% of the production that a good receiver has in these tight end premium leagues to be still consistently viable. A lot of these guys will have like the top end upside, which is what really separates the good tight ends from the bad ones. But you can go out there and put up like 800 yards and 6 touchdowns. And with that tight end premium, you're a really flexible player, right? You'll be putting up like 180, 175 to 200 fantasy points. It's pretty solid. The problem is, though, is that to me, a lot of these Dalton Schultz-type players don't do that consistently long-term. They're not a 750, 800-yard tight end with a good amount of receptions every single season. They'll have, like, one season at that, get overhyped, and then the next year put up, like, 650 yards and nowhere near as many receptions and touchdowns. And then all of a sudden it's like, I don't even want to put him in my tight end spot half the weeks. So I think that that's the problem with a lot of these wastelord tight ends and why I feel like we generally avoid those types of players is that the wastelords are just too inconsistent. You have one good season and then you're done. You're irrelevant.
Yes. That is my thoughts on Dalton Schultz as well.
Maybe that's just a product of recent tight ends not being as great, like the Robert Tonyans and even like a Logan Thomas. And I mean, you can make the argument that will be Dalton Schultz and Cole Kmet to me is in that territory, right? I'm avoiding Cole Kmet. Like, these guys that just, the outlook changes so fucking drastically with them from one year to another. And it's not even because, like, they were complete shit or the receiving options completely changed and they added, like, a D-hop out of nowhere. It's just, like, these guys just kind of fade in and out when they're not nasty.
Mm-hmm. Think Mike Gesicki.
I think Gesicki's interesting right now, though. I actually like Gesicki as price.
I think Hunter Henry got nuked way more than he should have, but...
Well, like, Mike Gesicki, I guess, is the other thing, is that, to me, is Mike Gesicki really a worse receiving option than a healthy amount of the tight ends going above him? I mean, he's posted a better season than a lot of these guys, and I think right now he's just a better receiver than a lot of them.
I take Gesicki over... I don't know, Washington's a weird one, so I'm just going to exclude him from this. I take Gesicki over Dawson Knox. I take him over Likely.
Agreed.
Luke Musgrave. The rookies are all tough. I don't know how I feel about those.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a good rookie tight end class, but I don't know.
I agree. I think this is a good rookie tight end class. I think that these guys are pretty fairly valued. Mm-hmm. I think, though, my argument is more so Mike Gesicki should be in that. He should be closer valued to the Evan Ingrams of the world, and even fucking Cole Kmet. I can't believe Cole Kmet's still that high.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
those types sense. Of players.
Pokemon is an easy sell.
At that price, it's like an astronomical sell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the tight end landscape's really weird right now. I'm looking through. I forgot about Detroit drafted LaPorta.
Yeah, LaPorta's a little expensive for me. I don't think he's bad. I do like LaPorta. But
I think there's a drop off though after I think there's a drop off after Kincaid, then another one after Mayer. And he's like pretty much valued right as the same as Mayer.
The problem I have with LaPorta is that in a lot of the rookie drafts, I see him just going for a lot higher than what his ADP is. I've seen it, and maybe it's just with the players I play with, but I see LaPorta going like mid-early second consistently in these drafts I've been doing, like 204, 205. And I like Mayer a good bit more than LaPorta.
I agree. I think early second, but I mean, I get why people are doing it, just because the tight end landscape is such shit that you're willing to. That's like the one position you're willing to overdraft for it.
Yeah, and he dominated the target share at Iowa.
LaPorta is a weird one. I don't. If he's going in the 11th round in startups, it's. There's not many players I do like in the 11th round, so maybe LaPorta is okay, is finally
priced. I do like Addis Price just because it's tanked so much. Bellinger for the Giants, he's tied in 29 now at 1,800. I think while Waller is going to be productive while healthy, the big two words are while healthy. And I think if he misses some time, that can be a tight end that can like come in and be kind of productive for you. He was last year when he played before he got injured. So I guess that's how much faith you have in Waller's health. And probably as a Waller owner, I just have like PTSD the past 2 years of just him missing so much time, or like when he finally comes back and plays, he plays like five snaps and it's like out for the game. But I think his value has dropped a ton compared to like, I thought he was pretty decent last year. Like he's at 1,800 on Keep Trade Cut. That's like...
I can go into my anti-Waller spiel again, but I'll save you all the trouble. Yeah. Someone I'm interested in on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, because I'm just not going to buy, what's his name? The guy you just mentioned from the Giants, Bellinger. I'm not going to buy him. I just think he's a roster clogger. What about George Kittle? Like, would you rather have George Kittle or a random 24 first?
Ooh. I don't know if he's worth a random 24
first. I think I lean the random first.
He is, but he isn't. It's weird because, like, if you look at a lot of, like, trade calculator sort of stuff, he won't be. But when you look at his ADP, he's definitely going around players that are worth a random first.
Here's a bunch of trades revolving around George Kittle. George Kittle and Terry McLaurin for Garrett Wilson. George Kittle That's for Deontay Johnson and a 2025 second. I'm trying to get more that are just George Kittle.
Surprise, Kittle and McLaurin got Garrett Wilson.
George Kittle and a second for Dallas Goedert. Weird. Okay. George Kittle for 202 and 305. George That's Kittle for Cole Kmet and a second.
Oh my God. Whoever finessed trading away Kmet and a second for Kittle.
Kittle for Sam Laporta, Justin Ross, and a 2024 second. George Kittle for David Montgomery, a 2025 second, and a 2026 first.
Wow.
George Kittle for a 2026 second.
I can't believe that Montgomery trade.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. This one I'd much rather the Kelce side. George Kittle and 2024 second for Travis Kelce and 2024 third.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's... Some of these are surprising. But, yeah, I think I would lean the random 2024 first. Just because, also, it's like... It's a crowded offense. With like a lot of really talented receiving threats. Debo, Ayuk, McCaffrey's there. I still think Kittle's a stud. I think he'll be productive. But that's kind of my thinking of why I lean the 24 first.
Yeah, the problem with Kittle, though, is that if you're a contending team, I mean, there's just not really tight ends that you're going to get better than him.
Mm-hmm.
So there lies the rub. Because, like, yeah, I completely understand that argument that there's really good receiving threats, but I mean, George Kittle is one of the big names there, you know? Yeah, he's one of them. And yeah, the big problem is that, like, T.J. Hockenson just costs more because he's younger, and then Pitts, Andrews, Kelce are in that really expensive tier. So, like, I've been thinking about, like, in our home league, like, okay, what if I were to sell Kittle and try to downgrade at tight end? But it's like the tier below Kittle is pretty fucking trash and wild. You know, it's the wasteland, right? It's literally you're going to the wasteland. Welcome with open arms. It's the fucking wild, wild west out there.
No, it is. You just pray. You put them in your lineup and you pray.
And to me, Darren Waller is right now the wastelord. I think that right now Darren Waller is king of the wasteland.
Waller's a tough one. it's the injuries. Because I still believe in him when he's healthy. He's just he can't stay healthy. So that's what makes him tough. Because if you told me he's playing 16 games this year, I'd say I would feel pretty confident in him having a good season and not be just one of the wastelord guys. It's just he's in that category because I'm only counting on him for like 8 games, 9 games. Freiermuth, I still like. Goddard, I have in that upper tier. Kincaid, we'll see. I don't know how much people are expecting from a rookie tight end as high as he's being drafted.
The thing I like about Kincaid, right, is that I think that Kincaid is a lot closer to a T.J. Hockenson-level prospect than people are giving him credit for. And from what I've seen, you could just I mean, he's the guy going at 110. And I have Kincaid a lot closer to that tier of receivers than I do the Kendre Millers of the world. So I just think that where you pick him up at that 110 price, even 109, I guess if you're feeling really frisky, but I'd probably just rather have Zay Flowers who's usually going there, or Quentin Johnston, or Addison, or whoever the fuck is there. But at 110, that just feels like kind of a smash.
I think that's I'd agree with you there, especially kind of where it is at the end of the round, and then all those running backs that go second, a lot of them were big question marks.
Talking with Parker about this. Dalton Kincaid has, to me, a lot of factors in his favor. One of which is that his last season at Utah was more productive than probably your favorite tight end coming out of the draft. I mean, the guy put up numbers. On top of that, he's got fantastic hands. He's in that role that I feel like a lot of teams kind of want right now with like almost like a big slot, but you can still line him up at tight end, unlike Gesicki, and he's not going to completely suck. And he's good vertically down the field. Like, he doesn't need to be a world beater to be a flex relevant player, right? Like, Dallas Goedert behind Zach Ertz was a flex relevant player. And I think that Dalton Kincaid is like significantly better than what Dallas Goedert was coming out of the draft. So I think that Dalton Kincaid, like, yeah, I agree, it might take him a little bit to really get to his peak level of production, but I think people are almost discounting him because of the fact that guys like Evan Engram and Njoku and just the other tight ends drafted in his pool of players as of recently were busts. But I like Dalton Kincaid more than a lot of those other dudes coming out.
Go ahead, JT.
Yeah, so I was surfing a lag spike there, so I've maybe not the full story here, but I heard some pro Dalton Kincaid stuff from Frank, which with the comparison to Dallas Goedert and Zach Ertz, I'm not sure if I'm just repeating what you're saying, Frank, but I just think Dalton Kincaid is better than Dawson Knox, who's the perceived like main guy right now. And then after that, it's basically just Stephon Diggs. And then like Gabe Davis is going to be the next in targets. Like Dalton Kincaid actually has a pretty viable path to targets with Josh Allen as his quarterback, like
early on.
Yeah, I'm not discounting Dalton Kincaid at all. And in fact, I think I'm getting to the point where I might want to start taking Kincaid over Flowers. I'm not sure.
I don't think he has the upside that Zay Flowers does, but the other factor I think Kincaid
really
is going
for, I would argue Kincaid is the one that with more upside.
I don't really see Kincaid being like this insanely elite level tight end.
Yeah, the problem that Kincaid has against him, and though he didn't test at the combine, I'm pretty sure, so we don't have his like athletic score. I don't think he's like the super athlete we would want him to be to put up like the crazy numbers, but I think he's good enough to be, you know, like a, he could be in that top five tight end role.
He could be significantly good. His upside to me is like his ceiling case is Zach Ertz, right? Like what Zach Ertz was with the Eagles, you know, at his top end season in his prime, putting up like just over 1,000 yards, like 1,100 yards. I think that that's a ceiling case where you look at, I mean, obviously Kelsey, because he's done it, but like Kyle Pitts and Mark Andrews, their ceilings is like kind of like elite level receiver numbers. Yeah. And I'm not sure Kincaid has that in his wheelhouse, but maybe he does. I could be wrong.
And I would say that's the kind of discrediting. Ertz, even though he only had like 1,000 yards, he was finishing like top two in tight ends pretty consistently because he'd have like 9 catches.
Dude, 1,100 yards for a tight end is crazy in tight end premium. I mean, the tight end premium is boosting you to an elite level player, but let's be real. Like, Zach Ertz is not Ja'Marr Chase out there. Oh, Zach Ertz is not Travis Kelce.
I've seen in terms of tight ends, yeah.
But the other thing, though, last point on Dalton Kincaid is that, to me, the only thing that was really a flaw in the Bills' offense other than their run game was, I don't even think that was a big flaw, is that they were missing like a Cole Beasley type of just reliable underneath player. I feel like they had to rely on Diggs almost to do that and provide like that one-on-one, almost like 2v1 carry, right? Just throw it up and fucking get it. Gabe Davis, it feels like, and all those other randos that they have, the Isaiah McKenzies or Khalil Shakir, right?
Yeah.
They're just kind of these, we're going to throw them the ball a handful of times vertically down the field when you have a good matchup, but they're just not consistent, I want to feed you targets type player.
Yeah, but I mean, that's where, I don't know if it's a point you're going to get to, or maybe I missed you, I just said it before, where Kincaid can kind of feast those middle of the field intermediate targets.
Yeah, and that's just a role that was missing from the Bills.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, you know, you had to make Stephon Diggs that type of player, and then your verticality was provided by a lot of these other random players. But it's going to be really interesting to see what the Bills, how they use Kincaid, because they still like Knox, and Knox is, like, blocking-wise, a better tight end than Kincaid is, but that doesn't necessarily mean that Kincaid isn't going to see the field or is going to be cannibalized by Knox. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they use that. And that's why I kind of brought up the Zach Ertz comparison, is that I think that that's what you want out of Dalton Kincaid, is him to have the Zach Ertz role in these two tight end sort of sets.
Mm-hmm.
You guys want to talk about anyone else?
I'm good.
See, now, if you're a contender, just last point, would you trade? Yeah. Would you try and move down from Kittle, or are you just going to keep Kittle and be like, fuck it, like, not thinking about
just
it?
Just told him. I think the thing about Kittle is, like, last year was fine for Kittle. And I don't think people are really counting that. Like, he did have 15 points per game last year, which is low for him, considering he's averaging 18 points per game. Yeah. But I think this year, I don't know who the starting quarterback is going to be, if it's Brock Purdy, if it's Trey Lance, if it's Sam Darnold. But I just think Kittle's in a better spot than most other tight ends, including TJ Hockenson, who's ranked two rounds ahead of him. So to me, I think with Kittle, he's kind of just that guy that I hold and ride until the wheels fall off, because you're not going to get the value that a top five tight end deserves just because of the age. And he's kind of gotten knocked for his year last year. So I'll pull we talked about trades with Kittle. Like he's decently cheap for
those trades. Really vary.
Yeah.
I mean, there was like the Travis Kelce one, for example, where it's just like,
that one was crazy.
I would definitely trade Kittle in the second for Kelce in a third. But then there are other ones where it's like,
or even like the one with like Montgomery in the first and the second, like that.
Here's one for example, Kittle or Michael Thomas, Chase Claypool, and Tyler Higbee.
Kittle for,
I think I just ran Kittle. Michael Thomas, Kittle, Chase Claypool, and Tyler Higbee.
Yeah, I'll just take Kittle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's easily Kittle to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of trades like that I'm looking at where it's like,
he's attainable, yeah.
The Kittle for like that 2 seconds-y, like early second and contender second sort of price to me is really nice if you're a contender.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because you're right. The fact of the matter is, like, Kittle having a down year at 15.5 points per game and still being a top five tight end, yeah, give that to me. The only Kill reason I was thinking about it, though, like, what if, to me, this might be just the last year you can get a first for Kittle.
I agree with that.
Yeah. But even, I'm looking at all these trades, and it's very rarely that someone's getting a first for Kittle. Like, Kittle for 202 and 305.
I think that was one of the lower end ones though, because like he went for Deontay plus in one. Now it's also weird with the formats though, because there might be higher premiums or multiple tight end formats that aren't being accounted for, which could be artificially inflating his price. And conversely, in non-tight end premium leagues, it might be deflating his price a little bit.
Kittle a third and a fourth for a first and a second. So yeah, that would be valued above a first.
I think realistically, if you mass offered out Kittle for a random 24 first, now mass offer, you're probably offering it to only a small subset of teams. It's not like a guaranteed trade, but that trade will go through. If there's a contender that needs a tight end, there are contenders willing, and not like the super contender of your league. I think that there are definitely teams willing to give up their first for a tight end.
If Lance, we got mixed reviews in chat. If Lance gets a start, it might be a rough season for Kittle. Keep Kittle.
Yeah, but how much worse could the Niners QB situation get from last year?
I was going to say, I don't think it's going to be much of a drop-off like that. Because it's not like Purdy was like going like absolutely crazy. He was just winning games.
And if anyone does worse than what the QBs were doing last year, I mean, they're going to get benched. They've got other guys who can play.
True. Yeah, I agree with that. I think quarterback, I'm not concerned about Kittle. It's more so just health and age would be.
Yeah, the passing yards thing, I think it's over it. But Purdy last year, in all of his games, passed over 250 yards once. Twice.
They were touchdowns.
If you count that game against Seattle, but out of like, I don't know.
Kittle was touchdown dependent last year. And listen, he scores, right? Like, and I feel like a lot of his plays are very high value plays, right? Like,
yeah.
When he has the ball in his hands, he's fantastic. But once again, the big issue is the fact that the downgrade sucks, right? Like, going from George Kittle into an Njoku feels horrible.
What about like a fire move, though?
I don't know. I just think Njoku's cheaper for basically the same production. Yeah, Freiermuth, I guess, is a little bit more long-term. But once again, then I feel like I'm giving up Kittle for a first, then to pay basically a first to get Freiermuth.
Yeah.
Because Freiermuth, to me, is hard Mixon paradox right now, which is hilarious because he's ranked right next to Mixon, where it's like the person who has Freiermuth wants a late first. I would not be giving up Freiermuth for less than a late first valuation. It's probably just not worth it. Yeah, I don't love... Listen, I love Freiermuth as a Steelers fan. As a fantasy option, it's just annoyingly murky because of that offense and the amount of mouths to feed and whatnot. But he is a good tight end. He's a good fucking player.
Anything else?
All right, we can cut it there. So yeah, if you made it this far, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. People in chat, Skull, Isley, Shadrock, really appreciate it. Love seeing you guys around. We'll catch you next Tuesday. Peace out. See ya. Have a good one.
Thanks, everyone.